You know that specific sinking feeling you get when you're managing a software project?
Oh, yeah. Not when it's on fire, right. But when things are actually going well.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
the calm before the storm. You've got this tool built. It works perfectly. The logic is solid. It solves the business problem perfectly on, the developer's laptop.
Right.
But then inevitably, someone, maybe it's you, maybe a client, they look at it and say, "Wow, this is amazing. Now let's just put it on the website."
Or let's hook this up to the live accounting feed.
Yes. And that is the exact moment the development team just looks at you like you asked them to, I don't know, move a mountain with a teaspoon.
They get that pained look.
They freeze. And they say, "Well, to do that, we're going to have to rewrite pretty much the whole thing."
It's the classic technical manager's nightmare. You feel like you've already paid for the house, but now that you want to add a window, the contractor says they need to pour a whole new foundation.
That is the perfect analogy. And you're sitting there thinking, why? The math hasn't changed. The rules are the same. Why does changing the interface mean destroying the brain of the software?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating.
And that frustration is exactly what we are solving today. Welcome to the deep dive. We are unpacking a fascinating set of architectural documents today that claim to solve this exact problem.
And do it elegantly, too.
Very elegantly. We're decoding a philosophy that allows software to be built like Lego bricks, reusable, composable, scalable.
And what I really appreciate about this source material is that it's not just high-level fluff.
Right, no abstract theory here.
Exactly. It provides a very specific mechanical structure, and it's all built around one core mantra, which is to separate the thinking from the talking.
Separate the thinking from the talking. It sounds so simple, almost like relationship advice.
It really does.
But in this context, it turns out to be revolutionary. Today, we're going to explore the visual model they call the layered sandwich.
The core, the contract, and the adapter.
Yep. And just to set the tone for you listening right now, this is not a coding tutorial. We are not going to sit here and read Python syntax at you.
That would be terrible audio.
Truly awful. No, this is about structural decisions because the source material makes a really bold claim here. It says technical managers who understand this architecture actually possess a competitive advantage over those who don't.
Because it's about knowing the shape of the system so you don't get held hostage by the rewrite.
Exactly. So let's get into the philosophy first. The sources use a really grounded analogy to explain the split between thinking and talking. They take us to a restaurant.
Right, the kitchen and the waiter. It is the absolute cleanest way to visualize the separation of concerns.
So walk us through that. In this model, the core of your software is the kitchen. What are its
Oh,
rules?
the kitchen knows how to cook a steak. It handles the raw ingredients, the heat, the timing, the actual chemistry of cooking. That is your business logic. But here is the golden rule. The kitchen knows absolutely nothing about the customer.
Nothing at all.
Zero. The kitchen doesn't know if you're sitting out on the patio or at the bar.
Right.
It doesn't know if you're wearing a tuxedo or swim trunks. It doesn't even know if you ordered via a fancy iPad app or by shouting at a server across the room.
It just knows steak, medium rare, table four.
Exactly. It operates in this tight bubble of pure function. Now, contrast that with the talking part of the software. That's the waiter.
The adapter layer.
Yes, the adapter. The waiter handles the outside world. They take the order, manage the customer's mood, deal with complaints, and physically bring the food out. But the waiter never, ever cooks.
Yeah, if the waiter runs into the back and starts flipping burgers, you have a massive hygiene problem.
You really do. And conversely, if the chef runs out to take drink orders, the food stops coming out.
So you have to keep them entirely separate.
Precisely. And the thing connecting them is the contract.
The ticket.
Right. In a restaurant, that's the little standardized ticket the waiter clips onto the wheel. The kitchen only accepts tickets. The waiter only writes tickets. Neither side needs to know how the other actually does their job. They just trust the ticket.
And this is where the big aha moment hit me when I was reading through this. Because the problem we started with, that nightmare rewrite problem, it usually happens because we want to change how the software is delivered.
Right. You want to add delivery to your restaurant.
Yes. And if you have the separation, adding delivery is actually easy. You don't retrain the chef.
No, the chef doesn't care if the steak is going to table four or a house 3 miles away.
Right. It's the exact same ticket. To add delivery, you just hire a driver. A new adapter who knows how to write that same standardized ticket.
That is the whole goal. If your software is built this way and you want to move from, say, a desktop app to a web app, you are just swapping the waiter for a delivery driver. you are not touching the kitchen.
You're changing how the software talks, adding a web interface, an API, whatever, without ever touching how it thinks. The brain of your tool is locked away securely behind a contract.
Exactly. And that safety allows for incredible speed later on. You're not risking breaking the core math just because you wanted to change the font size on a button.
It makes so much sense. Okay, so we have the kitchen, which is the core, the waiter, the adapter, and the ticket, the contract.
Yep.
But I have to play devil's advocate here for a second, because anyone who reads tech news hears the term API constantly. Application programming interface.
Oh, sure.
Isn't what we're describing just an internal API? Why do we need this special contract terminology?
That is a really fantastic question. And the source material actually dedicates a huge section to this exact distinction. It essentially boils down to the difference between a wall and a promise.
A wall versus a promise. That sounds almost poetic. Unpack that for us.
So an API usually refers to connecting two totally separate systems over a network. Think of your mobile app talking to Stripe to process a credit card.
Okay, so my app sends data to Stripe, they do their magic, and send back a confirmation.
Right, but think about the actual physics of that interaction. Your code is on a phone. Stripe's code is on a server in a massive data center in Virginia.
Yeah.
You're connected by the internet. That connection is slow. It takes milliseconds, maybe hundreds of them. And crucially, it can fail. The internet goes down, the server times out, the packet drops.
And more importantly, I can't touch their code. I can't literally walk into Stripe's office and change a variable on their server.
Exactly. That is the wall. It is enforced by physics and heavy security. You physically cannot touch their code. Now compare that to the internal contract we're talking about today. This is happening inside the exact same program on the exact same computer.
So there's no internet connection involved at all?
Zero. It's a simple function call. It happens in nanoseconds. It cannot fail to connect in the way a network can. But here is the clever trick. We pretend there is a wall. We use discipline to create a logical boundary. The source uses this great office building analogy. An API is like hiring an outside firm. You mail them a letter, they mail you a result. You never even see their office.
Okay, that makes sense.
But an internal contract is like having the accounting department and the engineering department in the same building. They could walk over to each other's desks, look over shoulders, and start messing with each other's spreadsheets. The physics allow it. They're right down the hall.
But that would be chaos. You'd have engineers changing tax withholding rates by accident just because they thought it was a different variable.
Total chaos. So to prevent that, they make a promise. We will only communicate by sliding this one standardized form through a specific window.
And that form is the contract.
Exactly. By keeping that promise, they get all the benefits of independence. Accounting can reorganize their whole filing system without confusing engineering.
But they get it at function call speed.
Yes. API level independence, the ability to swap parts out without the network lag. It relies entirely on discipline, not distance.
And that discipline is probably the hardest part, right? Because it's always easier to just cheat.
Always. It is always easier to just reach into the core and grab the variable you need because you're in a rush on a Friday afternoon.
But the moment you do that, you've broken the architecture. You've essentially let the waiter walk into the kitchen to cook.
And once the waiter is cooking, you can't replace the waiter without stopping the entire kitchen. You've created a dependency that just shouldn't exist. Tangled the wires.
Wow. Okay, let's get mechanical. We've got the philosophy down. Kitchens, waiters, walls, promises. But for the builders listening or the managers trying to visualize this with their teams, what does this actually look like in the code?
Right, let's look under the hood.
The source talks about using universal languages.
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road. The source suggests using simple dictionaries, key value pairs, as the universal envelope for these contracts.
Dictionaries? Like a filing cabinet with little labels.
Yes. Almost every programming language understands key equals value. Python has dicts, JavaScript has JSON objects, Ruby has hashes. So the contract basically says, I expect a dictionary with these exact specific keys.
And it doesn't care where it came from.
Exactly. It doesn't care if that data came from a fancy React web form, a super messy Excel spreadsheet, or a text message. As long as it is packed into that standard dictionary format, the core will accept it.
And there's this specific rule mentioned about the run function. Can you explain that part?
One entry point rule. In this architecture, every tool has exactly one door. You don't call different parts of the tool randomly. You package your input data into an envelope, let's call it tool input, and you pass it to the run function.
Just one door in.
Yep. That function delegates to the core, does all the heavy math, and hands you back a tool output envelope.
It's so clean. One door in, one door out. But I'm stuck on the messy middle part.
Real world.
Yeah. We know the real world isn't clean. Users fill out forms wrong, spreadsheets have weird random columns, dates are formatted in European instead of US format. Who cleans all that up before it goes into the nice, neat core?
Now we get to meet the presenter.
The presenter. It sounds like someone giving a keynote speech, but I suspect it's way more blue collar than that.
Oh, definitely. In this architecture, the presenter is more like a translator, or even better, a packer in a huge warehouse. This lives entirely inside the adapter layer, the talking layer.
Okay, so it is strictly not part of the core.
Definitely not. Imagine you have a warehouse. You have a person who picks the raw items off the shelf, that's your I.O. code, physically reading the file. You have a driver who delivers a box, that's your app code. But in the middle, you have the packer.
The person who puts the bubble wrap in and takes the box shut.
Right. The person who takes the raw, messy item, puts it securely in the standardized box, and slaps the correct label on it. That is the presenter. It's often just a file literally called presenter.py.
And its only job is to take the messy data from the web form and reshape it into that clean dictionary the contract expects.
Exactly.
And I assume it works the other way too, when the answer comes out.
Yes, absolutely. When the core finishes thinking and hands back the result, the presenter reshapes that data for the user.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Maybe the core calls a variable match score, but the user needs to see a pretty column on the screen called confidence level. The presenter handles that translation.
So the core never has to worry about what the column headers on the website are actually named?
Never. The core is pure logic. It lives in this pristine bubble of perfect math. The presenter deals with the messy reality of human language.
The source gave a really specific example of this that really helped it click for me. The CardArt RFQ Matcher.
Oh, great example.
It's basically a tool for matching spreadsheet rows to PDF artwork files. Well, sounds super complicated.
It's a real heavy business process. And when they broke it down to analyze the architecture, it had 7 distinct steps. Step 1, upload the files. Right. Step 2, read the spreadsheet.
Also talk in.
Step 3, package the data into the dictionary.
Okay, that's a presenter doing its job right there.
Correct. Step 4, call the contract. Pass it to that run function. Step 5, the core does the thinking, the actual complex matching algorithm.
The kitchen is cooking.
Step 6, the result comes back out. And step 7, display the result on the web page.
7 steps. And the source pointed out something that frankly blew my mind. Out of those 7 steps, how many are actually thinking?
Just 1. Step 5.
That's it. The other 6 are just talking, reading files, formatting data, displaying HTML.
And that is exactly why this architecture is so incredibly powerful. If you want to switch from a web app to a command line tool, you only change the 6 talking steps. But step 5, the complex matching algorithm, the thing that actually provides your core business value, it remains 100% identical. You don't even open the file to look at it.
That is the competitive advantage right there.
Yeah.
You aren't rewriting the brain every single time you change the body.
Exactly. You protect the asset. The value of your software is almost always in the core, the specific rules that make your business money. The rest of it is just plumbing.
Okay, so that perfectly covers building one single tool. But the real world involves connecting tools together. I need the output of my, quote, tool to go directly into my invoice tool.
Composition, yes. This is where things usually get incredibly messy in legacy systems.
Yeah, the dreaded glue code problem. I've seen this 100 times. A developer writes a script that basically says, run tool A, take the result, and just shove it into tool B.
And you hardwire it. You literally write code that says, take total sense from the quote and put it directly into amount due on the invoice.
And the problem is you've just coupled those tools together perfectly tight.
Exactly. If the quote tool updates and changes total sense to total dollars, your invoice tool instantly breaks.
And because it's just a random glue script, nobody even notices until it crashes on a Friday afternoon right before payday.
Right. So the solution here is to formalize that connection. We introduce translators, usually a file called translators.py.
Another specialist. So we have the packer, the presenter, and now the translator.
Yes. A translator is a specific, dedicated function whose only job is to convert tool A's output into tool B's input. It acts as a dedicated bridge.
So if tool A changes its output formatting, I don't touch tool B at all.
No. You just update the bridge. You update the translator. It completely localizes the change.
And then to run the whole show, they mention a flow runner.
The recipe card.
Right.
It's just a dumb list. Step 1. Run list, quote. Step 2, translate. Step 3. Run invoice. The Flow Runner contains zero actual logic. It's just a sequence of events.
I love the Lego analogy the source uses here. It really visualizes the difference between glued code and composed code.
It's the best way to visualize it. Think of the contracts that standard input and output shape we talked about as the little studs on top of a Lego brick. Every single brick has them. That's exactly why they fit together.
And the translator.
Those are the special little connector pieces. You know, the ones that let you connect a brick sideways or upside down. They adapt the connection between two different shapes.
So we aren't trying to build one giant mega brick that does absolutely everything.
No, we are composing hundreds of very simple small bricks. And because they all respect the contract and they all use translators to connect, you can build a spaceship, a castle, or a massive database, all from the exact same pieces.
So let's bring this home for everyone listening. If I'm a technical manager or just someone interested in how resilient systems work, why should I care about one-way dependencies or presenters? Why not just let the developers code however is fastest for them?
It all comes down to sanity and speed over the long term. When you separate the thinking from the talking, you get one-way dependencies. The adapter depends on the core, but the core depends on nothing.
The kitchen doesn't need the waiter to exist in order to cook a steak.
Exactly. This means when something breaks, you know exactly where to look. If the numbers are mathematically wrong, it's the core. If the page looks weird, it's the adapter. If the data isn't moving between tools correctly, it's the translator.
You stop hunting for ghosts in the machine.
You localize the problem instantly.
And there's a massive point about AI here too, right? Because everyone is trying to code with AI right now, and this feels incredibly relevant.
It's entirely relevant. This architecture is almost tailor-made for AI coding assistants.
Yeah.
Think about it. AI is incredible at syntax. It can write a complex Python function in seconds.
Right, but AI struggles with, where does this actually go?
Exactly. It's like a highly capable but totally chaotic junior developer. It writes code that works, but it puts it in completely the wrong file.
It doesn't know the architecture. It just wants to solve the prompt you gave it as fast as possible.
It doesn't know the intent. Mm. You just say, build me a matching tool. The AI will write a spaghetti mess where the core logic is mixed right in with the HTML formatting.
Right.
But if you say, here is the contract, put the logic in the core, put the formatting in the presenter, the AI can execute that perfectly.
You're the architect. The AI is the bricklayer.
Yes. And you can't be the architect if you don't actually understand the blueprints. That is why this matters so much for non-coders. You need to be able to tell the AI, stop. You are violating the boundary. Get that logic out of the adapter.
That's really powerful. It shifts the role of the human from just a typer to a true designer.
And it builds a system that can actually grow over time. The source material ends with a really provocative thought on discipline, actually. It says most developers write code that works today but can't be composed tomorrow.
Because they just want to get it done. They hack right through the wall.
They build a wall, then they punch a hole straight through it because it's faster. This architecture isn't about being smarter. It's not about knowing more complex algorithms. It is entirely about the discipline to keep the promise. I promise to only talk to the core through the run function. I promise to use the standard dictionary.
It's always easier to cheat. It's always easier to just grab the data directly. But you pay for it later.
You pay for it with a rewrite. You pay for it when you can't add the mobile app. You pay for it when you can't connect the hot new tool.
So we've been talking a lot about keeping promises in code today, but think about this. If we architect our software to rely on disciplined communication and mutual trust rather than forced physical walls, what does that say about how we should architect our actual human teams?
Oh, that's a fascinating parallel. Are your departments building monoliths or are they composing with Legos?
Something to mull over next time you see a rewrite pending ticket hit your desk. Thanks for diving deep with us today.
It was a pleasure.